You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right, you're Locked On Broncos. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. Luke Polglaze is off today, so the next man up is none other than Broncos Country's anchorman himself, Brandon Perna. And what better timing than Patriot Week could we possibly have to get Perna on the show? Brandon, are you ready to get your podcast on, sir?
Yes. Thank you for bringing me back.
Absolutely. Real quick, before we get into the Bronco talk, please understand, Locked On Broncos is not here to just report the news, because you can get that anywhere. We're here to give you a more in-depth analytical look at your favorite team, the Denver Broncos. So be sure to tell your friends about the show, share the episodes on social media, help us blow this thing up, because we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on your Denver Broncos at least 5 days a week. We're maniacal about this thing, just like you are. Now, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but make sure to subscribe also on iTunes, or if you're an Android user, on Stitcher. We got three big games left on the schedule, and you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, Brandon, there are a few things I want to talk about today. And first off, I want to talk about Demaryius Thomas, and there's a reason why. This guy, now in his seventh year, who was voted by his teammates, I've been told, and confirmed as a team captain for the second time in his career, he might be one of the most prolific offensive players the Broncos have now with Peyton Manning gone. But, Brandon, he's never really struck me as a leader. I mean, rarely do you see fire from him. He's very soft-spoken. His own father basically described him once as so shy that it's almost crippling. And yet, he's named a captain. And there's, a reason I'm asking you this, but Brandon, when Thomas was named a team captain for the second time, of course, this year, what were your thoughts at the time, and how do you feel about it now?
I think that, you know, Demaryius Thomas is probably one of the guys that other players look at who leads kind of by example. And yeah, he is a quiet person. I think that's just the nature of his personality. And I think maybe there's some respect there for somebody who's not necessarily trying to be something that he's not, which is, you know, one of the vocal leaders. But I think for me, the way I look at Demaryius Thomas is he's an extremely talented receiver. He has made tons of plays for the Denver Broncos, but I think, like many offensive players this season specifically, that there have been times in big situations or in important situations and games where specifically receivers, whether it's a receiver or tight end, have dropped balls, missed plays. Mm-hmm. And that's the only concern I have. Who gets voted captain? You trust that the guys in the locker room have the guys that they want in those roles. And I'm sure there's a lot of reason and justification behind that with Demaryius.
I would agree with that, that there's a reason why he ended up a team captain, but it kind of leads me to the next thing. One of the trends inside the NFL right now is for players from opposing teams at the end of games to exchange jerseys, and they typically do it at midfield. They make sure a camera guy's there to snap some pictures, and then they trot off to the locker room. And Von Miller, he's a big time jersey trader. He does it each and every game, and I consider myself to be something of a competitive person. And this practice has always kind of struck me as odd. Like, if you just lost a game, why are you over there chumming it up and, like, posing for pictures and trading jerseys? Like, it's just hard for me to wrap my brain around it. But, you know, that's up to those guys. But when you see Von Miller standing, you know, with the big old grin on his face next to Justin Houston, for example, after the Chiefs hand the Broncos a loss, Brandon, how does that make you feel?
As a fan who watches the game, I think after a loss, there's still that anger and fire in you. So I understand, like, not wanting necessarily to see that happening, and to see you know, your team that you've been rooting for, who just lost, having a good time with the guys who just beat you.
Right.
Because I think the way you look at it as a fan is you think, oh man, maybe if they had a little more fire, a little more edge, they would have won that game. But it really doesn't bother me at all. And maybe because it is the trend, because everybody's doing it. If, you know, Von Miller was one of maybe like three players in the league doing it after each game, there might be something to it. But I don't know. I've never played professional football, so it's hard for me to say how I think a player should act after a game.
Sure.
And that's what it boils down to. It is just a game. So, but you know, I might lose at a game of mini basketball in my garage, and I'll be pissed for 30 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, it's one thing, fans, you know, we get emotional about the teams we love. And for these guys, I'm sure the emotion is just as real, but there's that professional element to it and aloofness maybe. But here's why I bring it up. Titans receiver Harry Douglas infamously chop blocks Chris Harris Jr. last week. And, you know, just as a reminder, I mean, this is a dirty block that occurred on the backside of a running play that went off right tackle, and the block was totally away from the point of attack. The play is essentially over. Harris hits the ground writhing in pain, and really he was lucky that no major damage was done.
Right.
He's able to return. Then Aqib Talib, of course, retaliates. The Broncos get docked 15 yards. But after that drive, the defense is able to keep the Titans from scoring any more points. But, you know, without fail, as far as the aftermath, Talib's teammates had his back, you know, while just like Aqib had Harris's back. Von Miller told me yesterday he's behind Talib, right or wrong. But then, Brandon, after the game, Demaryius Thomas, a team captain, goes to midfield and exchanges jerseys with none other than Harry Douglas. I mean, tell me how you feel about that and how you would feel if you were one of Thomas's, let's say, defensive teammates inside that locker room.
Well, when I first saw the picture, I was surprised. I'll be honest there, because I mean, you know, like you and I look through the photos that come up every week.
Yeah.
So, you know, I saw Demaryius and then I was like, oh crap. He's standing there with Harry Douglas.
Yeah, like persona non grata.
Yeah. So I think my thought was probably just like, I don't know if I would have done that after that game. As fired up as the defense still was, I would be willing to bet that that may have not sat well with many of them.
Right.
But I also think that DT is, I think he's close with a handful of those guys. I don't know if that necessarily would be something that would cause some sort of rift in the locker room. And maybe only because it is Demaryius Thomas. You know, if it were somebody else that day, I think it might have been more of an issue. But for me, I think surprising, and maybe I'm guessing Demaryius Thomas was not seeking out Harry Douglas for that jersey swap, and it was the other way around.
Probably.
But I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't have done it if I were him. But again, like, I think it's just hard to say whether something like that is going to have a big effect on the team. What I will say is I think, you know, coming up this week, this team has to make a statement. And that loss in Tennessee, with the offense not being able to score more than 13 points, feels kind of like the team is on the downswing and that they might be ready to just give up on this season. And I don't want to say something like that, but And it might only be half the team, because the defense shows that they still have the fire and passion to go out there and try to win games, but we're not seeing it on the other side of the ball.
Well, see, and I just real quick to backtrack for a second, because I want to talk more about what you just brought up there at the end. But see, and I don't mean to be too reactionary about this, but I see it as Thomas doing that with Douglas is totally, you know, being totally oblivious behavior, basically, that's unbefitting of a team captain. And for example, you look at it, we've seen Peyton Manning get fired up when someone crosses. Remember that time that what was his name? DJ Swearinger.
Oh, yeah.
Popped Wes Welker, and he ran down to the end zone, popped off an expletive to him after they scored a touchdown the next drive. You know, would Peyton Manning be trading jerseys with DJ Swearinger after the game? No. And, you know, you bring up the locker room. You don't think it's maybe necessarily a big a riff thing, but I've heard some things that kind of aftermath result of what his teammates, Thomas's teammates, especially on the defensive side, saw. You know, like just a lot of, what the heck, dude? Like, you're a team captain. What are you doing? And it kind of brings back the idea to me that, you know, without the sheriff around, I think in a lot of ways to keep guys in check, you know, there's been reports that a rift has existed in the locker room between the offense and the defense throughout the season that dates all the way back to training camp, you know. And with, as you bring up, the next three games, man, they're brutal. Each one against opponents who started 10 and 3 or better, which is like the first time it's happened since before I was even born, back in the late 70s. So I just see it as like, you know, the Broncos need all hands on deck. They need a unified locker room. And I am concerned, especially since you bring it up, it's like, are they mailing it in? That performance in Tennessee has got to make you wonder.
Yeah, I think somebody on the offensive side of the ball needs to become the leader that team needs. And I think it's really hard to ask a quarterback in his second year to be that guy. And then, you know, outside of that, it's like, who do you look to? Because they're struggling in almost every other area. You know, the offensive line has its issues.
Yeah.
The receivers have their issues. The tight ends have their issues. The running backs have their issues. There's nobody there to be that guy. And you can only get so much of that from, you know, your head coach. And maybe it does need to be Trevor Siemian, but I don't know if we'll see that happen this season.
Right.
It
needs to be more than just clapping your hands as you take the field. Like, let's go, let's go. I mean, there needs to be more, some fire from old Siemian.
Exactly. And it's got to come from somewhere. And maybe and I don't think it's going to come from Demaryius Thomas. I don't think it's going to come from Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know. There's a lot of guys that got paid too. So
that's true.
I think that also has an effect on the locker room. From what I've heard and listened to, you know, over the last like couple years, especially from former players, is that one of the big things that can divide locker rooms is money. And that's one of the intangible things.
Like a financial divide?
Yeah. So I don't know exactly how it works, but I've heard that the two things you don't talk about are money and women in the
Makes
locker
sense.
Room. Or, mess
kind of,
with
kind of like in the workplace, you're not supposed to talk about religion or politics.
Right, right.
Don't
so,
talk about women or money.
But there's clearly something different. You know, there's obviously the things you can point to, like Manning not being there. But there's a different vibe about this team right now. And I still believe that if the offense stops making mistakes, that we could see a shift there.
Right.
But the defense is probably getting tired of carrying the team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you see those shots of, like, you know, mainly it was earlier in the season, but you'd see the offense come off the field, you know, and a guy, I'm thinking specifically of a scenario, Emmanuel Sanders comes off and defense is getting ready to take the field, and he's over there saying, man, I'm sorry, guys, I'm sorry. Like, we're letting you down, we're letting you down. Because they're getting worn out being on the field
right.
so much, you know. But
I think they're missing C.J. Anderson too.
Yes.
You know, not just as a playmaker, but I feel like he could be one of those guys on that offense to sort of shoulder some of that leadership.
Yeah, like back to remember the Indy game and the divisional game, 2014 divisional game, and the offense is just crapping the bed, and he's fired up. Remember that in the fourth down?
That was one of his best games. Like it felt like he was the only guy out there who was
–
going to win that game on his own for the offense.
Exactly.
And I think the other thing, just real quickly, that you're talking about, like the jersey swapping and things like that, is what feels like it's missing is kind of that nostalgic sort of all the players hate the players from the other team.
Right.
And that's because most players used to spend most of their career in the same city, right?
True.
Not not only did you have that where you knew the guys you were playing with all the time, but now it's like you see players are friends. They do more off the field. They're interacting way more than they ever did before. But the fans still hate each other because right. Now with social media, we're seeing fans fight each other more than yeah. Players do on the field.
And social media shrunk the world. So now fans can, they're not restricted by time and distance. They can sit and jaw at each other in real time, and that only magnifies the issue. But real quick, I want to talk some more about Patriot Week. But before we do, I want to talk about SeatGeek. Now, SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the football games you want to see up close and in person this season. You got two more opportunities to catch the Broncos at home. In the regular season, you can always follow them, of course, too, to Arrowhead next week. But there's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they go out, they price compare for you, they search multiple ticket sites, and anyone who's purchased tickets on the internet can attest to the fact that prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek's always going to find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You immediately see any underpriced seats, you're able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket that you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. And best of all, Locked On Broncos listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you get that. First, download the SeatGeek app, then go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code, enter promo code LO Broncos, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LO Broncos today. Now, Brandon, the New England Patriots are coming to town once again. How psyched are you for this game?
I'd be more psyched if the Broncos offense was playing better.
Indeed.
But, I just hate the Patriots so much. So
you're the most famous, I think, Patriot hater in Broncos country.
Maybe, but the problem is, it'll mean Sunday is either going to be a great day for me or a terrible day.
Right.
And after the way the Patriots handled the Ravens, I'm a little nervous for this game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Things are lining up for this to be yet another Broncos Patriots kind of conference classic. They might be the evil empire, but the Broncos have really over the years served as the rebellion, if you will, always there to impede New England's march toward galactic football domination. Now, real quick, I wanted to ask you about this, Brandon. Kevin Duffy of MassLive.com asked Bill Belichick about the Broncos this week. It was an interesting quote. You might have seen it, but let me read it real quick. Belichick said, quote, talking about the coaches and stuff, quote, different personnel running the same plays. It's the same plays in Houston, the same plays in Baltimore, the same plays in Denver when Mike Shanahan was there. It's the same plays now. It's the same plays. The same as when Wade was in Denver, when Wade was in Buffalo, and when Wade was in Dallas, and then when Wade was in Houston. Now Wade's in Denver, so it's basically the same defenses. It's the same thing. Then he goes on. Joe DeCamillis was in Denver. Then he's in Chicago, and Joe was in Denver. There's a lot of continuity and consistency with their coaching staff, close quote. Now, Brandon, I've been pounding the table all season long, lamenting, essentially, Gary Kubiak's stubbornness and inability to innovate and make adjustments in-game. You know, it's been a real problem for the Broncos. He scripts those first 15 plays of the game, and it ain't changing come hell or high water. And the result, you know, you have an offense that leads the NFL in three and outs, and then here comes Bill Belichick commenting on how everything is the same. You know, predictable. Kubiak is running the same place Shanahan ran, et cetera, et cetera. Now, he couches it at the end talking about continuity and consistency, but how do you perceive his comments, Brandon? Because I kind of interpret them as a sort of, you know, backhanded compliment, a shot across the bow, if you will.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way, but I think there's truth to it, too, and I think we're on the same page when we've seen the offense struggle. And we've seen the stubbornness there to do something different. And we've talked about you know, what Kyle Shanahan has done in Atlanta, making, you know, some small and subtle things to evolve the way that that offense needs to be played.
Yep.
So I agree with Belichick, and I think it shows the difference between the way the Patriots coaching staff operates and the way this current Broncos coaching staff operates. And it's that the Broncos coaching staff believes in their system, and they're going to stick with those things schematically no matter what. And the Patriots are going to change what they do every week.
Right.
That's why they're so hard to game plan for. That's why when you watch a Patriots football game, you see they're off. Like, Tom Brady always has open receivers to throw the ball to. Not always. That's an exaggeration. But if you see, if you watch a lot of the plays, passes he completes, their guys get open. They do different things.
Like, right. They find the weakness. They find the weakness and they step on your throat is what they do, basically.
Right. And, you know, I think the Broncos offense could be successful if they had the right pieces there, right? If their offensive line was dominant, then Kubiak could run the way he wanted to. It would open up the passing plays the way they want to. But they don't have that. And their refusal to, I don't know, adapt or change to it has cost the Broncos. But again, you know, Kubiak also said earlier this week that a big problem is lack of execution, and he's really right on that. It's hard to be successful when guys are in positions to make plays and they don't.
Right.
And it's been everybody. It's Booker missing, you know, pass protection assignments. It's Benny Fowler dropping passes. Virgil Green dropping passes. Forsett and Derby both getting stripped. So I don't know if Kubiak's system or if the Kubiak system's as broken as we think it is, or if it's just they don't have the right guys there to run it effectively.
Yeah, it's kind of felt like, you know, the Murphy's Law this year for the Broncos, where in a lot of cases, in key moments when things could go wrong, they do go wrong. And for me, I think a lot of that does boil down to, you know, this is Kubiak's second year as the head coach. A lot of personnel holdovers and draft picks and stuff from the previous regime, and even though it's the same front office now, Elway essentially is drafting guys that are going to fit a specific scheme. You know, is going to fit an attacking one gapping 3-4 system, guys that are offensive linemen that are going to fit the zone blocking scheme, and running backs that have the patience and the vision to see those things. And I think we're seeing a kind of the delay where they're going through the process of elimination, trying to figure out who fits into what. But really, to me, the biggest thing comes back to, you know, we see it year in and year out, mostly with offensive lines. However the offensive line does, so goes that team's destiny. And even with the Broncos last year, man, they started off terrible on the offensive line. I mean, it was just a comedy of errors week in and week out. But Broncos won the Super Bowl, and the big reason for that is they solidified down the stretch. They might not have been the most prolific offense in the history of the NFL. You could argue one of the worst offenses to ever win the Super Bowl. But the one thing you can say is the offensive line gelled down the stretch,
right,
and the running game all of a sudden came alive.
Yeah, they found ways to run the football late in the season. That's why they beat the Patriots. That's why when Peyton Manning came back into the game in San Diego, they won. That was maybe one of their best rushing games of the season.
Yeah.
And that's what got them, you know, through the playoffs. And they haven't had that this year. And there's too many places to point your finger. And it's injuries, it's mistakes, it's lack of execution, it's lack of creativity, it's some questionable play calling. It's, you know, when a team's bad, and the Broncos as a team aren't bad. They're just performing poorly on one side of the ball.
Yeah.
And it usually takes a collective effort for that. And I think that's kind of just been the story this season. And you're right. They're also missing some of that magic they had last year where.
Yeah, the mile high magic. Games,
you know, that Chiefs game was rough with the field goal bouncing off the goalpost for the win there. Like last year, that the Broncos would have gotten that bounce. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to have it again this year because week one, Graham Gano misses that game-winning field goal. Right, so
yeah.
Here we go again. But luck runs out.
It does. I think they've tapped out or maxed out the credit cards the football gods have given them in that regard. Now they're going to have to earn it. They're not going to be given any lucky rolls. And, you know, this game is going to be the first of three major tests. And, you know, I think, honestly, I'm with you where I'm kind of on the edge and not sure what to think of this team. But the one thing I can say is that this game will, I think, ultimately decide Denver's season. And even Von Miller said yesterday, he goes, it's the biggest game of the year, which I thought was interesting, because if they can win this game, if they come, blow everyone's minds once again in the national media and actually win this game, that's the kind of juice and the kind of momentum that can propel them on to go win on the road in Arrowhead and then come back and beat Oakland at home.
That's getting hot at the right time is what that would be. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do it. The one thing the offense in their last two losses, the one thing that gives me confidence something can change is that I feel like in Kansas City and in that Tennessee game, we've seen Trevor Siemian progress where he's starting to look like a quarterback who's comfortable back there, doing the things they want him to do. And even last week, you know, he's playing through a foot sprain. So he wasn't even 100% last week. And the one, you know, big mistake he had was the underthrown pass to Demaryius Thomas in the end zone.
Right.
Other than that, another solid game from him. And I think we saw Justin Forsett make some decent runs. The fumble really killed momentum.
Yeah, but he had a spark, man. He brought a spark that we haven't seen since before CJ got hurt.
And a big run was called back, you know, because of a hold.
Yep.
So I think he'll get the ball more this week, and I think there's hope there for them to turn it around offensively. And Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders both had very big days. So I just feel like it's easy for us to point out all of the things they're doing wrong.
Sure.
But in doing that, I also feel like they're very close to being at least a good enough offense to make a push. And that's all they have to be. They have to be good enough like they were last year. And the other thing they're missing, you know, is the sheriff, maybe understanding any defense he sees on the field and being able to, you know, not put the team in a bad position because he knows what the defense is doing, even if his body wasn't going to let him do it last year. So,
Yeah, and I think they just, you know, the defense is good enough to do it again. I honestly believe that. But overall, and as you say, you know, the offense doesn't need to come out and light it up, but they do have to play complementary football and, you know, keep the defense fresh and do their part, you know, like the offense managed to do by the skin of their teeth late in the season. But, Brandon, tell us what you've got planned at That's Good Sports, That's Good Broncos, for Patriot Week. Anything cooking you want to get out to the peeps?
You know, it's a busy week. I wanted to do something real cool or crazy, but I'll have my prediction episode as normal. And then hopefully I found this really weird app that Vic Lombardi sent me. It basically turns whatever you say into a rap. So it like auto-tunes you and then puts it over like a beat. Nice. And I'm hoping to tomorrow make a FYTB rap. That will be maybe the best or worst rap ever written in history, and put together a fun video for that.
For those who are wondering, just go to Twitter and do the hashtag FYTB, and you'll figure out what that means. But thanks for joining the show, bud, and kind of short notice. You know, you got to follow Brandon on Twitter, at Brandon Perna. Of course, go subscribe on YouTube to That's Good Sports and That's Good Broncos. You'll be glad you do. I'm sure most of you are already familiar with it. But if you haven't and you like to mix comedy with expert football knowledge with Broncos highlights, I mean, it's the perfect concoction. It's all there for you.
I'll put it this way. I'm not funny enough to be a comedian. I don't know enough about football to be a football expert, but I can put those two things together and kind of be good at a funny football guy, dude.
There you go. He's one of a kind. He's Brandon Perna. Thanks again, bud, for joining the show.
See you, Chad.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later. All right. Now, before we get out of here, real quick, you know, one of the benefits that we have with the Locked On Podcast Network is the opportunity to work closely with our advertising partners. And we enjoy taking the time on our show to talk about these advertising partners and to help them reach new people. These are companies we believe in. You know, it's a powerful thing. It's not something we take lightly. And we're always looking to grow those advertising partnerships, those relationships. If you're listening to this show as a business owner and you'd like to reach the male demographic between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should take a hard look at sponsoring this podcast, because 98% of the Locked On Broncos listenership is male, 80% of which are between the ages of 18 to 44. Now, our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at LockedOnBroncos@gmail.com. We can talk about it, but that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Broncos. Again, big thanks to Brandon Perna for joining the show. Find him on Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Luke will be back tomorrow for our preview episode of for Friday's show of the game against the Patriots. We'll scout some players. We'll break down who to watch for, keys to the game, and, of course, our official prediction. You can find Luke on Twitter at Luke Polglaze, myself at Chad N. Jensen. We want to hear from you, so hit us up. The show's Twitter handle is at Locked On Broncos. Make sure you subscribe, y'all, and don't forget to share these episodes. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.